Thanks for letting me know that. Okay, let's go.
Thank you, Your Honor. Kathleen Sullivan for the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. In this case, the Superior Court substituted its judgment for the expert judgment of the Metropolitan Water District, which I'll refer to as MET, in the setting of rates. Now, to see that, we have to recall what MET is. MET is a voluntary collective of member agencies, and MET provides two kinds of services to those agencies, without which we wouldn't have water in Southern California. It owns and operates a system for the importation and conveyance of water that relies largely on the Colorado River Aqueduct, bringing in supplies and conveying water to the east. But also, thanks to Governor Brown the Elder and the political wisdom of the elders in 1960 or so, MET also participates in the operation of the State Water Project, which helps to both import water from the north to the south and, again, to provide for the second service, which is the conveyance of water for member agencies across aspects of the system. Now, crucial to the error below is that that is one integrated system. What MET imports and conveys through the system it owns and operates, both its conveyance system from the Colorado River Aqueduct and its distribution system down in its distribution area, that whole part of MET system is integrated with and fundamentally continuous with the part of the system that it participates in through its contract with the State Water Project. That's the key to the case, Your Honor. It's an integrated system, and the Superior Court erred by stepping into the role of the agency and purporting to segregate that system into two different parts and to say that MET can't charge its transportation charges that it has to pay the State Water Project to its member agencies. That's fundamental error. Let me start with the non-constitutional challenges. And again, Your Honors, the key to this case is the standard of review. On the non-constitutional challenges, the standard of review that the Superior Court should have applied to MET's quasi-legislative rate-making decision was arbitrary and capricious or substantial evidence. Substantial evidence is in the Wheeling statute. Court gets it totally wrong at pages 25 and 60 of its phase one statement of decision because he says, I have de novo review under the Wheeling statute. Not so. Statute says substantial evidence. Now, if you look at the 20,000-page administrative record here, MET is so far over the line on substantial evidence supporting the allocation of State Water Project transportation costs to the member agencies that it's just not even close. And let me start, Your Honor, where the Superior Court should have started. The State Water Project contracts. We signed the first one back in 1960, and we've signed them continuously since then. And a State Water Project contract, what that means is that MET has bought participation rights on behalf of its member agencies in the State Water Project, which is the amazing system. We've heard a lot about it when the Oroville Dam was overflowing. When water is plentiful in the north from the snow melts and from storage in the reservoirs up north, MET participated in the right to import water from the California Aqueduct down from the north, and also to convey water from point to point in the State Water Project on behalf of its member agencies. Those are the two services it provides by being part of the State Water Project contract. Now, Your Honor, if you want to see the heart of where the Superior Court went wrong on the meaning of the State Water Project contract, all you have to do is go to page 53 of the statement of decision in phase one, where he said, oh, well, this is like buying a car from a factory. And the car has it, you should, the cost of transportation of the car on the carriers and trains, that's already priced into the car. In other words, the Superior Court treated the State Water Project contract as if you go to the north and you're going to the water store and you're buying water. But that's not what the State Water Project contract is all about. And Your Honor, we discussed the key citations in our opening brief at pages 63 to 64. And the key to the State Water Project contract is this. When MET pays hundreds of millions of dollars to the state, to the Department of Water Resources every year for its participation and access rights to the State Water Project, when we pay those amounts, we are enabling our member agencies to import whatever water is allocated, but we are also paying for, and this is the key, the construction, operation, maintenance, and replacement of all those aqueducts and canals, pumps and pipes that move water across the state water project. So what MET has done is, both for the part that we own, Colorado River Project, Colorado River Aqueduct, and for the part that we participate in, we have to pay for the transportation infrastructure, and we have to pay the state water project whether we get any water or not. I've never heard of a car factory that makes you invest up front in the factory, the trains, trucks, planes, and carriers that carry the cars, even if you don't get any cars. Now, once you understand that and you see that page 53 of the phase one decision.
Can I just make sure I understand something correctly?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under the exchange agreement, am I correct in understanding that the transportation charges under the exchange agreement are the same as the MET would charge under a wheeling agreement?
Exactly the same, Your Honor. And let's separate two things. The exchange agreement, as we argue in our preferential rights appeal, that's the exchange agreement is for the purchase of water. But it used the transportation rates, same as for a wheeling agreement, as the price term for the exchange of water. So you're exactly right, Your Honor. And that's why I went right to why this you must reverse this as a rate challenge, because the price term in the contract dispute is the rates, the exact same rates that MET charges. Now, we've tried to, in our opening brief, because this is confusing, but on page 33 of our opening brief, we lay out to you how the rates are structured. Transportation rates are actually charged both to full-service water purchasers. They have to pay the transportation rates plus the supply rates. And, of course, wheelers, we're not, no good deed goes unpunished. We don't charge wheelers for supply or for the capital costs of the supply facilities, like the reservoirs where the water is stored. We don't charge them for supply. But we do charge, as part of our wheeling rate, the same transportation rates that we charge as part of the full-service water contract. So, Your Honor, yes, the transportation rates that were held to be an illegal price term in the exchange agreement are the exact same ones we apply to everyone. And the writ of mandate is breathtakingly vast. It's told us we can't charge those transportation rates to anyone anymore because they violate cost causation. So, Your Honor, I want to just go back to why there's substantial evidence in the record to support MET's allocation of state water project transportation costs to member agencies. First is the state water contract itself. And don't take it from me. Look at the Goodman decision. The Goodman versus City of Riverside decision, as a matter of law, held that the state is not really the, the state may have formal title to the state water project, but the member agencies, through the property taxes they raise and through the revenues they collect for the purchase or wheeling of water, are the people who funded it. Governor Brown was brilliant. How do you fund a project without charging any state taxation? You make the member agencies support it. So the member agencies from the beginning, through property taxes and water revenues, have been the sole security for the funding for the state water project. And once you see that, then it's very clear why the Superior Court erred. The Superior Court erred in treating the whole state water project like it's a big water store, which is only about the volumetric supply of water. It's not. What we have to do is every year we have to pay still for the construction of the state water project on behalf of our agencies. We have to pay every year still for the capital costs of the reservoirs to store the water. We have to pay every year still the operation and maintenance costs of both the reservoirs, the place where the water is stored and supplied, and the canals, aqueducts, pumps, and pipes, the part of the infrastructure that does transportation. So nothing could be more logical than saying, if you're using our system to convey water, transport water, you pay the transportation charges. If you're using our system to import water, you pay transportation charges plus supply, and that's exactly what we've done.
What about the water stewardship rate, however?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a little more questionable, don't you think?
I think I can see why you would think that, Your Honor, but actually when you think about it, it's not. So
it's contrary. Isn't it true that the Met itself issued a statement sometime, I guess it was back in 2012, quoting it, saying that the central objective of the water conservation program is to help ensure adequate, reliable, and affordable water supplies for Southern California by actively promoting efficient water use. And wasn't that a recognition that the stewardship rate goes to the supply factor rather than the transportation factor?
In fact, not, Your Honor, and I'm afraid that there's really two different meanings of the word supply. So remember, water stewardship is an obligation that's imposed upon Met by statute. And the question is, who should you pass along that cost to? Well, if it saves local agencies supplies, if they have more of their own supplies through conservation or desalination or whatever, then they don't have to import as much water. But that has no bearing, that doesn't create any supply of water for Met, because let's remember who Met is. Met is a supplemental supplier that only gives imported water if the locals don't have enough. So conserving local doesn't create supply for Met. What it does is it reduces the wear and tear on the transportation system because we don't have to import as much water.
Conserving water means you're going to need less water, and perhaps because of good conservation efforts, you'll have to build less facilities in the future. But the cost of maintaining those conservation programs, that's not a cost of transporting water. It's not a cost of using the transportation facilities, which is what the wheeling rate's all about.
Two things, Your Honor. First, the standard of review on the non-constitutional challenges, and I want to make sure we have time to talk about Prop 26, but on the non-constitutional challenges, the question is not, would we have done it 100% to transportation? Would 50-50 have been better, transportation and supply? The question is, was it a reasonable exercise of Met's agency expertise to allocate the savings from local conservation to the transportation function? And the reason why that's reasonable is that it doesn't help Met's supply. It doesn't put any more water in the Oroville Dam if San Diego has a desalination plant.
But there's a question of reasonability, and then there's a question of whether it fulfills the statutory authorization. 1811 talks about charges that are incurred for the purpose of wheeling or moving water. And that's where I have a conceptual issue with respect to the stewardship.
Right, Your Honor. So here's the key about conservation. Right? Wheelers benefit only when there's unused capacity. The more conservation there is, the more unused capacity there is for wheelers to transport the water. So it actually makes sense for Met to say, look, local conservation doesn't really help us with supply. Whatever supply is sitting up in Lake Paris or in Oroville Dam, that's unaffected by San Diego's desalination plant. That just affects how much water San Diego is going to want to import from us. But it doesn't affect our supply. What it does affect is for every 5% of savings, as we calculated, it's undisputed in the record, we might be able to postpone building a new aqueduct to bring in imported water. So the key, and I want to focus on this, is it's within Met's expert judgment. Not whether we agree with it, not whether you agree with it, not whether the Superior Court agrees with it, but was it reasonable for the Met to say local conservation helps us postpone aqueduct and canal projects? It doesn't really help us on supply. If anything, it means we have less imported water to offer these locals. But Your Honor, I take it if you're getting to water stewardship, at least I've made the point adequately on system access cost and system power cost. Those are part of a one integrated system. Now, the reason I mentioned Goodman and the State Water Project contract is that you, as a matter of de novo review, can hold that the Superior Court erred in hiving off the State Water Project and saying, I don't think this is an integrated system. I think there's one that you own and one that's a water store for you. That's really incorrect as a matter of law. But at a minimum, Met was within its reasonable expert judgment, if you defer to it as the separation of powers requires, in allocating all transportation costs, the cost of the canals and aqueducts on the State Water Project, as well as the cost of the canals and aqueducts on the Colorado River Project, to the transportation costs. I wonder if I might turn to Prop 26, because my esteemed adversary, of course, will spend a lot of time on Prop 26. They lead with it in the brief, and I think that's telling, because there's really no way for them to win this under the non-constitutional standards of review, which are substantial evidence and arbitrary and capricious. So then the question becomes, on Prop 26, is there any basis for a more searching judicial second guessing of these attribution of transportation costs from the State Water Project to Met's transportation cost? And I want to agree from the outset, of course, Prop 26 is its constitutional argument, so of course there's going to be independent judicial review. But the question is, what is the merits standard for that independent judicial review? Now, my learned adversary wants to say, oh, well, it's payer-by-payer proportionality. No Wheeler should have to pay for any transportation costs up on the State Water Project unless he wheels from point A to point B up on the State Water Transportation Project. Well, with respect, we have long since passed that argument. In fact, San Diego won on our argument back in the Rincon del Diablo case, both in the Metropolitan versus Imperial Irrigation District case in 2000 and the Rincon del Diablo case in 2004. It is long established that we allow postage stamp rates for water in this state. Just like mail a letter across town or across the country with the same 42-cent stamp, so the same volume of water, when it's transported, you pay by the volume, but you don't pay by the distance it's traveled or the location it's traveled. So point-to-point transmission specificity was rejected in Met versus IID and in Rincon. And I think what that means is, you know, San Diego would lose in a heartbeat here if it was saying that we had to charge Wheelers only for the distance they traveled on the Met system, the Colorado River Aqueduct, or our local distribution system. Lose in a heartbeat, because postage stamp rates don't require that kind of point-to-point specificity. So then we get back to the same question. Is it different for the State Water Project? And the answer is no. First of all, just to be clear, there's undisputed record evidence that San Diego did wheel from point to point on the State Water Project transportation facilities. That's undisputed in the record. The Superior Court references to 2009 instances of it. But even if there weren't that evidence, the point is it's an integrated system. You're going to have more unused capacity to wheel over in the Colorado River Aqueduct area and our distribution system, depending on how much water is stored, shipped, or available over on the State Water Project. It's all one integrated system. We paid for it. We pay for it now. We continue to pay for it. And it enables our member agencies to move water across the entire system. And if you have any doubt about whether that's useful, just think about the events of this crazy last winter, where you have drought still continuing in the south, but the Oroville Dam is spilling over. It's a good thing we have an integrated system, because that means when we've got too much water in the north, we can store it and move it and then be able to pick up the slack over in the rest of the system. So, Your Honor, on Prop 26, frankly, the only issue is there some kind of different payer-by-payer specificity under Prop 26? The answer is no. And let me give you the three key cases. The three key cases, well, starting with California Farm Bureau, if I could give you four, the Supreme Court's guidance in California Farm Bureau is we don't do regulatory fees on a precise user-by-user or inspection-by-inspection charge. Same thing in Griffith 1 under Prop 26. But we've also cited to the court two cases from Proposition 218. It's a different constitutional provision. But the reason why I think it's helpful is the Prop 218 cases have rejected payer-by-payer proportionality, even though Prop 218 has the word proportionality in it, which Prop 26 does not. Prop 26 just speaks about reasonable relationship between a government product and service on the one hand and the operation of the system on the other. So, Your Honors, we think that the Griffith 2 case and the Capistrano case are very helpful, because they say all an agency has to do is come up with collectively reasonable charges for a class of users. Here it would be collectively reasonable charges for all the people who use the transportation facilities of the Met Water System, including the State Water Project portion of that system. That's what we've done, payer-by-payer specificity. If it ain't required for Prop 218, it can't be required for Prop 226, which doesn't even refer to proportionality. That's our argument there. Your Honor, you've been very patient. What I would just say in summary is that the standard of review that the court applied arrogated to the court a right to second guess the judgments of Met. All they had to be was reasonable supported by substantial evidence and not arbitrary and capricious for the non-constitutional challenge. And all they had to be for the Prop 26 challenge is reasonable at the collective user level, not the parcel by parcel level. We don't have to wait until a wheeler proves how far he wheeled something to charge him the transportation rate of keeping the aqueducts there and canals there so they're available when he wants to wheel. You don't need to reach any of this if you agree with us that San Diego's rate challenge under the exchange agreement was untimely, because our rate structure was validated by operation of law 60 days after the bond issue in September 2002.
I have trouble with that argument, frankly.
Okay, Your Honor. That's why I waited a little later to run it by you.
Okay. But I don't think we should even waste time on it.
Okay. Your Honor, we're just suggesting here, because of the funny price term in the contract, this is really a rate challenge. The chance to bring it was 60 days after the bond issue. And the key to our argument is the rate structure is part and parcel of the bond financing. Rates can change, and you can bring a new challenge to the level of the rate, but the rate structure was guaranteed back in 2002. Creditors relied on it, and it shouldn't be second-guessed now, because that undercuts the idea of the stability of the credit markets.
Okay.
Last points, Your Honor, and let me turn it over. Just quickly, preferential rights,
I'm
sorry, Your Honor.
Did you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. You have two last points?
Two last points, Your Honor, much more briefly. On preferential rights, the exchange agreement is a contract for the purchase of water. Don't be confused by the fact it uses conveyance rates, general conveyance rates, as the price term. What San Diego got through the exchange is water that Met has to supply at a certain point to San Diego, whether or not San Diego supplies any other water to us. It's an exchange of water. It's a purchase of water. It should be excluded from the preferential rights calculation. And last, you don't need to reach the phase two.
But wait a second. The whole point of this exchange agreement, it's not the purchase of water. They're using that to determine the price that's being charged, but it's the exchange rate and what we're arguing in these other matters, the money is paid for transporting the water, not for the purchase of water. The water is being purchased is not part of the what's paid under the exchange agreement.
So, Your Honor, with respect, we think the plain language of the contract is to the contrary. The contract says that the exchange water shall be denominated Met water, not local water. That's the language of the exchange agreement. The price term talks about using conveyance rates as part of the price term. Remember, San Diego doesn't just get, it gets $1 billion worth of water over 110 years, it got water. And what we would suggest is, respectfully, it's the purchase of water in kind. It's like a trade-in for your car as opposed to a cash purchase for your car. It's a purchase in kind. But, Your Honor, we think the plain language the plain language of the contract gets you there. It's Met water, not local water. It is Met water that is being purchased. The water that goes into the San Diego taps and sprinklers is Met water. It's for the purchase of water. It's paid for in kind, in part, through the exchange of water. But it's the San Diego...
I want to make sure I understand factually what's happening here. This is water it's mingled water, but what San Diego has done here is essentially, under the exchange agreement, agreed to obtain through the Met water that it was entitled to from Imperial Irrigation. Isn't that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But what happens is the physical molecules of water are different. The water from Met that's being distributed, we would say, is being purchased in part by fees and in part in kind through the exchange of a volume of water. So that's why we think it's fair to characterize it as a purchase of water. The fact that part of it is in kind shouldn't alter that analysis. But, Your Honor, that is not...
Your authority that got the right to this water from the Colorado system, right? And then it goes through the exchange agreement. But it was water that they had the right to acquire from the Colorado River.
Well, Your Honor, I want to keep preferential rights totally separate from the rate challenge. Over on the rate challenge side, we're talking about the reasonable attribution of transportation rates for Colorado River plus California Equity. Here, we're just talking about preferential rights calculation. It's nothing to do with the judgment. But last thing is, Met has been...
Well, wait a minute. It has something to do with the judgment in the
yes,
sense
Your Honor.
That we're trying to figure out... I mean, for me, I'm trying to figure out, is this truly a purchase of water, or is this a facilitation for San Diego to obtain imperial water that it otherwise has a right to?
Your Honor, it is the latter, but that makes it a purchase of water partly in kind, through an exchange of water rather than through the payment of money for water. And that's really the argument there.
Okay.
And what I meant is that it just goes to the part of the judgment with respect to the declaration on the preferential rights formula. It doesn't affect the judgment on the rates, the writ, and it doesn't affect... I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, I'm sorry. I've been interrupting you. I apologize for that. But I was just going to say, you say the contract characterizes it as the purchase of water. But the contract, paragraph 5.2, I believe, says, shall be characterized as metropolitan water only for the limited purposes of the price provision. That's the only respect in which it's characterized as metropolitan water.
Well, Your Honor, the other place I would refer Your Honors to is not just the contract itself, but the relevant law is the San Diego versus Met case from 2004. And that's, of course, the case that said just because capital costs are internalized into your water purchase does not mean it's not a water purchase for preferential rights calculation purposes. And that would be my answer to you here, Your Honor. Even if you think that some of the capital costs are being factored into the exchange, San Diego versus Met says that's okay. And the general reason is we don't want agencies to have to micromanage costs on a user-by-user, payer-by-payer basis. They're enabled to take capital costs system-wide and factor them in to rate terms and here a price term. Last round, you don't need to reach phase two. You've been very patient with me. If I could just say a few words so I don't leave you without thoughts on phase two. There was a trial on damages, huge judgment, $188 million plus statutory prejudgment interest. With respect, you don't need to reach phase two if you agree with us on phase one, that the district court applied too stringent a standard of review, erred legally, and shouldn't have substituted itself for the Met reasonable rate allocation. You don't need to reach phase two, but if you do reach it, we would respectfully request, at a minimum, a remand for a new trial, because the heart of this case was, did San Diego have to pay more than a lawful rate? And it never proved what a lawful rate would have been to prove injury by the delta between the lawful rate and what Met charged. And therefore, the damages that were charged and imposed by the court bear no resemblance to anything that was proved in the way of injury. And Met was prevented after phase one from putting in any new evidence of what the lawful rate structure would have looked like. So at a minimum, you should send it back for a new trial on damages. And we think the contract plain meaning of the interest provision is the real interest on the escrow was the prejudgment rate of interest. We shouldn't have been hit with about $45 million of prejudgment interest under the statutory default rate. Otherwise, we wouldn't have contracted for an interest rate. Thank you, Your Honor.
Are you going to address the cross-appeal, or are you going to wait?
I thought I would wait for my learned colleague, Mr. Kecker, to speak first. I'm happy to address it now if you have questions.
Get Kecker started, and then we come back to her. We'll get Kecker started.
I'm back? Yeah. Okay.
All right, Mr. Kecker, go.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
I don't feel much like a learned colleague after that. That tour de force, and all I can say is that what you heard is a complete mischaracterization of what happened below, what Judge Curtis Karnow went through for a couple of years in two trials, two statements of decision, lots of rulings that I'm sure the court will examine. The trial was about cost causation. Everybody agreed that cost causation was the standard that Met had to meet.
That's right. But you are not questioning, are you, the basic principle that was established in the the water district, the Met against Imperial, that system-wide transportation costs can be used as the basis for wheeling costs. You're not questioning that basic principle?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. In fact, we're relying on the fact that Judge Kaye tried that case. They established that postage stamp rates are all right. They talked about it's the owner's conveyance system. Well, and then they sent the case back for a determination of what costs are reasonably included. And that was all going to be litigated, and then Met dismissed it. This case that Judge Karnow tried is if you can think of it, is the remand from that case. They said, as a matter of law, system-wide charges are permissible, or at least we're not going to rule them out. But in terms of reasonableness and the standards that have to be applied, those are factual matters.
And why are they unreasonable in this case? The only reason I can find in that opinion and that it's given is that the Met doesn't own the California Water Project, doesn't own the aqueduct.
The California
it pays for the aqueduct. It's a cost of transportation. They use that as part of their system. Why isn't that properly included?
It's a cost of transportation is where the rabbit goes into the hat, Your Honor. When before unbundling, which this dispute's been going on for some time, there were bundled rates when the original Met case was decided about purchase of water and preferential rights.
Right.
They were bundled rates. Everything was at one rate. The State Water Project costs were after that, once San Diego found out that and made a contract to buy water from Imperial, they buy that water, and turn to Met and say, we need to transport this through your system, through your conveyance system. Met unbundled its rates, and over San Diego's objections, took the State Water Project supply charges, which they'd classified as supply, and said, oh no, we're going to treat them partly as supply and partly as transportation. And the way we're going to do that is to look at what the Department of Water Resources considers transportation. And we're now going to say that those charges are our transportation charges. What Judge Karnow litigated and what we litigated and went through on and took testimony on and did all the work of these trials was whether or not there was any substantial evidence that that was a reasonable decision. What Judge Karnow decided after listening to everything is no, that was not.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
We've read the record. Why
because
not?
The why not is
they get charged the transportation costs by the state.
They get.
I mean, that's true, is it not? The state says these are the transportation costs.
They get charged
for using
yes,
this system.
They get charged for the supply of state water.
No, but they
project
break that,
water.
They break that down, do they not?
They don't. Department of Water. The state
Department
breaks
of
it down.
Water
yes,
Resources
yes, of
breaks it down.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
All right, and that's what Metropolitan has to pay, is it not?
And the question is that Metropolitan's, the cost to Metropolitan for conveyance of water on the Colorado River Aqueduct or anywhere else? And the answer, Judge Karnow...
You know what Judge Karnow said.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But I don't understand it.
There's no...
Maybe you're right. Maybe they're being overcharged transportation costs. It's still a cost they have to pay, isn't it?
It's a cost they have to pay to DW.
Or transportation.
But it is not a cost of transportation. It's not a transportation cost. It's a supply cost. There's no reasonable basis.
It's a supply cost. Why is it a supply cost?
Because
the costs are broken down from the state. And you pay so much for the water, and you pay so much for using this system. And you pay so much for using that system, even if you're not obtaining project water.
That's correct. The State Water Project is a fixed cost that was treated as supply until they decided to load it onto the charges of their conveyance system. Marquardt, I can't pronounce that correctly, is a Supreme Court case that faced the issue of whether or not Met owns the State Water Project. They said that's unrealistic, that's unfounded.
They don't own it, but so what? They pay for it. They pay. They're assessed a payment for the transportation costs.
What they pay.
Who cares whether they have title or not?
What
it costs them this much money to use the system, which they use as part of their overall system of obtaining water and providing it to their members.
And the question under Prop 26 and under the Wheeling statute and under the government code section that he found and under the common law is whether or not that the fact that they pay that money is a reasonable charge for use of their conveyance system. And what Judge, you know what he found. The answer is no, it is not a reasonable charge for use of their conveyance system.
So you're turning this on title. They don't own the system.
No, I'm not.
Therefore, what's the focus on their system? It's a transportation cost. Whoever owns the system, this is what they pay to transport the water.
You're moving from postage stamp is okay under some circumstances, and now we're going to go back and say, okay, well, what should go into that postage stamp rate? If you're going to charge for using your conveyance system, what charges should go into that? Should you be able to put in state water project charges? Well, what a state water project charges have to do with using your conveyance system? Forget about ownership. And the answer is they don't have anything to do with using your conveyance system.
But your is title. It is the system which they use to obtain water from the north to provide to their members. And in order to do that, they pay, and I think the record reflects they pay, 58%, I think is the number, percentage, of the costs of maintaining that conveyance system.
And what does that have to do with the cost of maintaining, of using their conveyance system? We're not using the State Water Project to move Colorado.
Are you paying for the cost of using their conveyance system, or are you paying for the cost of them getting water to you? Those are two different things, right? I mean, I'm kind of with Judge Pollack on this. It's hard for me to unscramble this egg in the sense that this water, as Ms. Sullivan pointed out, you know, these molecules are all mixed up. It's all different water, and it all moves through this system. And San Diego gets an entitlement to a certain amount of water at a certain place. Now, it could come from anywhere in that system. And I don't understand why it's unreasonable to pay a charge based on the cost of transporting water throughout that system to get it to San Diego.
Well, throughout that system is the question. The conveyance system, its conveyance system is MET's conveyance system in Southern California. San Diego has to use it. It's imposed on, we can't not use it. And what MET says is that, DWR's conveyance system up north is also part of our conveyance system. Well, it's not. It's not their conveyance system. Marquardt says it's not your conveyance system. It's a completely different conveyance system. Now the question becomes, under cost causation, forget about it. I mean,
the system they use. It's the system they use. It's how they get the water from the north.
But it's not how they get
the water. They don't own it, but they pay for it.
When San Diego buys water from the Imperial Irrigation District, they buy water to deliver to MET at the Colorado River Aqueduct and say to MET, will you provide the service of moving this water to us through your system? And MET says, yes, we're going to do it, but we keep for ourselves the right to blend that water and produce any water we want to. We'll give you an equivalent amount at the other end. Thank you very much. What is the reasonable charge for that direct benefit, and in the words of Prop 26, what's the reasonable charge in terms of the Wheeling statute for using its conveyance system, the owner of the conveyance system, that's MET. What's the reasonable charge? And we looked at Judge Carnot looked at it, and after these trials, decided there was no reasonable basis for saying the charges of conveying some state water project water and calling it your conveyance system. There was no reasonable basis for doing that. You didn't do it before. The only reason you did it now is to goose the charges and make them more. And
under your view, I mean, I think the record reflects that in. I think it was back in 2009, if I'm not mistaken, the water at the San Diego Authority purchased some water that was not project water up north, and transported it, obviously, down to Southern California. Under your approach, they would, even though it's not even Metropolitan's water, there would be no charge for the cost of transporting that water down.
No, there was a charge, but it was the marginal charge that DW...
Not for the use of the system, not for the use of the conveyance system.
It was a small charge for a de minimis amount of water. It wasn't a charge for all the water that is transported through the State Water Project. What Judge Karnow found as a matter of law about this use of the State Water Project for wheeling is that most of that, it was de minimis, and most of that was for Met's water supply. They're bringing in somebody else's water for their own water supply. This de minimis amount does not turn 100% of the transportation charges on the State Water Project that DWR...
It seems to me you are disputing the basic decision that you can consider system-wide costs, transportation costs.
What the court said...
But you're basically arguing you can't consider the system-wide costs.
Of course, you can consider the system-wide
the system,
costs...
Despite the fact that they don't own it.
...of your conveyance system... And
your,
then you,
your,
and
your
then
focus you, is continually on your. You are focusing on title,
well,
because it is the system that they use, is it not?
Not the state.
Don't
water,
use it.
The State Water Project is a supply. It's a supply of water that they buy.
That's the system by which they convey water from the north down to San Diego, isn't it?
That's for the full service water. What we're talking about is that a reasonable charge? And that's fine when they do that. Obviously, San Diego pays 100% of that charge. It pays for everything that they get from the State Water Project. The question here is, what's reasonable to charge for conveying your own water that you bought from somebody else through Met's system to yourself? And the postage stamp rate case said that we're not, as a matter of law, saying you can't have a postage stamp rate. But what's going to be reasonable is to be determined by the trial judge when we remand the case, which is exactly what didn't happen because they dismissed it. And it's exactly what happened in this case when we got down to it and a hardworking Superior Court judge took a lot of time to look at what's reasonable and what's not reasonable to charge for use of your conveyance system when you're wheeling water. There's no question that they pay it, Your Honor, when they're buying water from Met, the full service rate.
Let me get to your. Can we talk about the statute for a second?
Of course.
1811. Is it your interpretation and understanding that when 1811 talks about charges incurred by the owner of the conveyance system, it's speaking specifically of their system?
The word reasonable means that it's talking about their system, yes.
Okay.
And the
That's
conveyance, and the same thing in Met versus IID, when they're talking about its conveyance system, they're talking about the conveyance system of Met. And it's not just... If there were some charges on the State Water Project, such as some de minimis wheeling or something that fit in, that could be shown, this is not this case, it's not in this record, that could be shown to be meaningfully attributable to transportation charges under the postage stamp concept, then they could have been included. But that's not what Met did here. Met included 100% of the transportation charges that it pays.
The system-wide transportation charges.
Okay, and what we're saying is that the finding here, based on substantial evidence, was that that was unreasonable. That was an unreasonable thing to do. And I'm not feeling like I'm making much progress on that, so I'll move to the water stewardship rate. Well, I mean, I guess I ought to say one other thing about that, though. The The reason they did it, as you know, is because of rate stability, something that the courts have said in Morro Bay, Palmdale cases, that rate stability in this new era of cost causation is not a justification for loading costs on that don't belong. And it couldn't be more clear that that's the reason when they unbundled the rates, that they did it the way they did. They needed to keep the state water project fixed costs in the transportation rates, because otherwise some people that were getting the benefit would pay more and others would pay less. They wanted rate stability, and that's something that is not a proper proper way to go. The water stewardship rate, if I could turn to just for a second, it's not a service. It's simply a tax. It's a slush fund that they use to give people local water supply through a desalinization program, water recovery program. It's just a collection of money that they can then dole out to constituency. Even if it were a service, it is not a transportation service. This notion of avoided cost was both not established in the administrative record, and there's no indication that Met has ever built anything because of the need to wheel water. They build what they build because of their need to move their own water. Third, even if you think some of it is involved in transportation or by part of this avoided cost business, there is absolutely nothing in the record, and they didn't try to attribute some of it to transportation and some of it to supply. It's clearly, I mean, we think it's a local supply charge, it's a local supply cost, but it's not a transportation cost. And what Judge Karnow found is, of course, is that it's not 100% to transportation, which is where they put it. The Goodman case, I had to talk about the, first of all, the Goodman case wasn't raised below in the way that they're using it now until the very, very end, and Judge Karnow dealt with it in his new trial motion. But the Goodman case doesn't say anything other than they have to pay costs on the state water project. It doesn't say they own the costs. It doesn't say they own anything. It doesn't do anything to upset what Marquardt says, which is that it's not their conveyance system. If you want me to talk about validation, I'll talk about validation. The Prop 26 argument I ought to turn to, because although we think all of them are equally strong, Prop 26 is the easiest. It only applies to the 2013 and 14 case because we lost in a motion to have it be retroactive, and it was held by Judge Karnow not to be retroactive, so it only applies to the 2013-14 case. Met acknowledged below that it was their burden to show that it was not a tax. That's pretty clear. They raised the exceptions E1 and E2 for the first time in their new trial motion. They hadn't raised it. They hadn't been arguing those before. I'm prepared to talk about those if you want to hear about them. But basically, I mean, it's just that the state water project transportation charges and the water stewardship rate were not reasonable costs for the cost of providing the service. And the service is transporting Colorado River water. A year later, in the Capistrano case, which, by the way, was remanded to the trial court, just like this. It was remanded to the trial court to make factual findings about what was and what was not reasonable. The Capistrano said that you can't charge for services that were not used. And here, these are charges for state water project transportation and water stewardship rate, both of which are not used in transporting water on the Colorado River Aqueduct. And then finally, Newhall, your brethren decided in 2016, that said that there's no reasonable cost of service where you're not using where you're not being provided something that the agency is charging for. And here, yeah. That's our argument.
New Hall's a lot different from this case, though, is it not? I mean, New Hall, they were treating as a cost of the water, the groundwater that they weren't even providing.
And here, they're charging for transportation of state water project water, which has nothing to do with use of their conveyance system.
They're doing it on a system-wide basis. Okay, we understand.
The other thing that's wrong with exceptions E1 and E2 to Prop 26 is the catch-all phrase at the or paragraph at the back, the proportionality paragraph, which clearly doesn't apply. And then finally, the arguments have been made about this being local government property. I don't know if you want to hear about that. We've briefed that fairly thoroughly. We believe that this is not, that it's an improper way to look at it. This is a service that's being provided, transporting the water. But in any event, the State Water Project is not MET's property, and the water stewardship rate is not a charge for the use of government property. I don't know if you want to hear about the impose argument or the electorate argument, both of which are briefed, I think, fairly thoroughly. And we believe that are established by Supreme Court cases in our favor. validation, I'm happy to talk about. We think that's an absurd argument. What's pledged to the bonds is revenues, not rate structure. That says it all. That's what people are told. And by the way, when they unbundled their rates, there were outstanding bonds. At that time, MET didn't say, oh, we can't change the way we do our rate structure. They had their revenues pledged to the bonds. That was fine, no problem, just as it is here. So the validation argument, we think, is not valid. And shall I turn to and preferential rights? I think we've talked about, and that's briefed fairly well, fairly thoroughly. I mean, it's pretty clear that when the case was decided originally, there were unbundled rates, and the court said, there's no requirement that you break out your rate components, and some of this is for the purchase of water, so we're going to treat it that way. And then after that, they unbundled their rates, and Judge Carnow found, based on analysis of the contract, that there was no that this contract is not for the purchase of water. Should I turn to rate structure integrity, and or does the court have questions about any of this?
No, I think it'd be helpful if you turn to the cross appeal.
Sure.
Okay.
The rate structure integrity.
I mean, it's really your call, Mr. Kecker. I mean, we're allowing you a certain amount of latitude, as we have Ms. Sullivan, in terms of structuring your argument. If there's a portion of what has been briefed that you want to emphasize, or as my colleague suggests, if it would be useful for us to hear about the cross appeal, or would be something that you feel would be worthwhile, then proceed with that.
I would like to do that briefly. I want to go back because I'm so bothered by it and think I'm getting very negative signals about the State Water Project finding. I mean, there was a trial, and we understood at the trial how the State Water Project was used, how it was classified, where the water came from, and the question was, is State Water Project water something that is reasonably, transportation charges and system power rate as well? And by the way, I should say, I think there was a mistake made, Justice Siggins, about the transportation rates being the same as the wheeling rate. They're not. What we're paying under the exchange agreement, what San Diego is paying, is system access rate, system power rate, and water stewardship rate. What the wheeling statute and the wheeling rate is the first and the last, but not the system power rate. Instead, it's the actual cost of power. And what MET did with San Diego's acquiescence is decide that rather than try to figure out the actual cost of the power for each transaction, it would charge the system power rate. But those are the transportation rates. So the question was, what is the state water project charges? Why would you put state water project charges into a charge for using MET's system? We're not going up and using the state water project except in a de minimis way, which is paid for separately. And so there was a trial on that, and everybody had an opportunity to present evidence. And there was nothing in the record, and we've cited a lot of these, except ipsy dixit, where somebody would say, well, we ought to charge state water project transportation rates as part of our system-wide rate, but nobody could say why. Nobody could say why they changed from, they didn't do that before. This was a supply charge. It was treated as supply, and now we're doing it this way. There wasn't anything in the record of any substance, except this one instance where they got the consultant Raftellis to say, well, that would be a good idea. And it turned out later, we found out it was written by Met's lawyers and Met's in-house people. But there wasn't anything, any meaningful testimony or anything in the administrative record that supported that decision. And that's what the finding was. And I urge you to read the statement of decision again. I know you've read it. So turning to, if there are no questions about that, I'll turn to the rate structure integrity. We lost a lot of issues in this trial, but we only raised two on the appeal. One is rate structure integrity, and one is a small attorney's fees for phase two. And for rate structure integrity, you know what the clause is. It's a clause that has, we believe, as its object to discourage any kind of challenge to a violation of law, namely illegal rates. And it was done fairly explicitly that way. It was enforced that way. And it's cost San Diego a lot of money. And we've raised two issues about it. One is that it violates the right to petition under the California Constitution. And second is that it violates Civil Code Section 1668, which voids contractual terms that directly or indirectly exempt anyone from responsibility. It doesn't say liability. It says responsibility for a law violation. And we have extensive briefing on the standing issue. It's a constitutional issue. It's a big issue. And Judge Carnell below found that if we did have standing, there was no factual issue that we were entitled to summary judgment on the rate structure integrity clause, but he found that there wasn't standing. Rather than wade into that, I want to focus on 1668 because we think that's easier and cleaner.
The standing issue simply comes down to whether or not the Water Authority has the constitutional right to petition, right?
I mean, yes.
That's what it comes down to.
Yes.
Nice, clean constitutional issue.
It's a clean constitutional issue with a lot of unclean argument around it in cases. I mean, the Met's position is based on a federal case interpreting the federal constitution, Starkist. We think the right, and then we get into this idea of structural versus individual rights, which we think under the California Constitution, you don't need to get to. But if you did, there is a case, Wolfram versus Wells Fargo, which was a vexatious litigant case, and they were trying to decide whether or not that was constitutional. And they're quoting Justice Story. They said that the very nature and structure of government is involved in the right to petition. So if you get into individual versus structural, the right to petition, we would say, is structural. And everybody seems to agree that if it is a structural right, you should have standing. And by, I mean, it just seems like there, this is something that right now, today, there's no time more, this kind of challenging what government can do to one another. Fights between government is something that we need to keep an eye on, to keep government in check. But going to the 1668, we've cited a couple of cases. One of them is Armendariz. Met's position and Judge Carnell found that if the RSI provision doesn't completely exempt Met from any liability, then it doesn't violate the civil code. And there are two California Supreme cases we think that say that's wrong. Armendariz was decided in 2000. It held that a contractual provision is invalid if it chills the exercise of a statutory or constitutional right that is in the public interest, needs public interest, or serves as a significant deterrent to the enforcement of that kind of right. And here, the sole purpose of this RSI clause is to serve as a deterrent and protect these illegal rates from challenge. And then in 2014, Iskanian in the California Supreme Court made clear that the contract does not have to completely preclude suit. That was a case where the there was an agreement to waive class actions for private attorney general claims, and they said that was okay, but forcing somebody to waive representative rights, even though you could sue individually, you can't make them waive individual rights. There was not a total exemption from liability. They found that an agreement that has as its object indirectly to exempt the employer from responsibility for his own violation is illegal. So we believe that the rate structure integrity clause is illegal and should be invalidated, and we're entitled to declaratory relief for all the reasons stated.
And your argument is that it's illegal in the respect that it does not, it curtails the responsibility to set reasonable rates. Is that,
yes.
Is that as I understand it?
Yes, the violation of law that we're pointing to is, its object is to keep any agency, any member agency from suing it over the validity of, over whether or not its rates were set pursuant to applicable law. With that being its object, that's an effort to exempt them from liability, and it's a deterrent, and it doesn't have to be total, is our position based on the Supreme Court cases.
In operation, though, the Wheeling statute seemed to recognize a judicial remedy for violations. Section 1813, I think, talks about any judicial decree. Or it seems that this provision also seeks to circumvent that statutory
both
entitlement.
Statutory and now constitutional. I mean, there's with this issue about whether or not a charge, a water, the Proposition 26 went to the voters with a promise that this is going to cover water. And now you have the Metropolitan Water District saying that if anybody tries to challenge our rates, they are not going to be able to look to this water stewardship slush fund for desalinization or for whatever they want. If the court has more questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
There don't appear to be any further questions. Now, Ms. Sullivan, I believe, if memory serves, that, and he'll be quick to correct me on this if I'm in error, but if I believe at the time that we proceeded upon Mr. Kecker's arguments, that Justice Pollack had an area of questioning that he was going to be asking you to respond to. Is that still the case?
Yes, I'm okay. Very interested.
So he has an issue that he wants you to respond to. We're going to do that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, that's not – but don't be thanking me too much yet, because we're going to do that, obviously, and then depending on how long that takes, then we will sort of set a course for what the remainder of the arguments this afternoon, because we're going to be compressing those now, or start to compress them, and So I will advise you as to how much time you have remaining after you address Judge Justice Pollack's question, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Pollack?
I'll cut right to the point. I'm concerned, focusing on the unconstitutional condition argument and the reasons for which the trial court held that the San Diego Authority lacks standing to assert that claim. The trial court's decision, at least, was based primarily, as I read it, on its interpretation view of the Starkist decision. And I guess I have twofold questions. I mean, first of all, Starkist even applicable? I mean, first of all, they upheld standing in that case, but
correct, Your Honor.
It was the dictum in that decision which said there would be no standing. So we're talking about the dictum. And that dictum is based on the whole notion that a state-created agency doesn't have the right to question, using the terms of in its decision and number of decisions, the will of its creator. This state agency can't challenge the state for violating, for transgressing its rights. But here, we're not talking about the authority, water authority here suing the state. We're talking about a conflict between two different agencies. And unfortunately, that's not an uncommon situation. So I don't even see the relevance of that authority. And indeed, I mean, the other sort of related point in upholding the standing in the Starkist case, in that particular context, one of the things that the court was talked about is that if standing were not recognized, nobody would have standing, and the issue could never be challenged. And isn't that exactly the same situation we have here? If the Water Authority doesn't have the standing to challenge this situation, who does? Hmm. Nobody. And you're creating a situation where, despite illegal water rates, they're forfeiting rights by challenging those rights. Mm-hmm. So those are the issues that are on my mind, and I'd be interested in your responses.
Thank you, Your Honor. You should affirm the standing ruling that San Diego does not have standing to assert the right to petition, which is an individual right against government. And I can't put that any more simply than to say that the government does not have standing to petition the government, because, and that is the same for two municipal agencies. They are both creatures of the state. Nobody's overruled Hunter versus Pittsburgh. They're both creatures of the state. And it would really be an extraordinary thing to say that in an intra-governmental contract dispute with a non-suit clause, because that's what we're talking about. And how many contracts are there? Is this going to affect intra-governmental dispute with a non-suit clause? If you want to take our benefit, you have to agree not to sue us. To turn that into a right of petition case takes all the creativity that my learned adversaries have with Justice Story and cherry-picking cases. But the reason they can't cite a single case that is ever held that there is a right on the part of a government agency to go to the courts to petition is that it's a standard contract term between sophisticated parties.
There's no case to the contrary either.
That's right, Your Honor.
The cases that are closest are the cases in the SLAPP area.
But Your Honor,
where it's been held that that statute can apply because the public agencies have the right to exercise those First Amendment rights.
That's right, Your Honor, but that's statutory, and there's no statutory claim here. The claim here is...
Statutory right is based on the premise that a constitutional right exists.
But, Your Honor, we can debate whether SLAPP is partly about the First Amendment, part about statutory rights, but let me just go back to the key point here. This is a sophisticated entity that entered into a contract with a condition or chose not to...
Sophisticated entity with limited governmental powers. Restricted powers, right?
Well,
powers in its enabling statute. And they allow it to enter into contract.
Absolutely.
But why wouldn't we look at getting this, to Mr. Kecker's 1668 argument? Why wouldn't we look at that statutory scheme and say, well, one of those, that statutory scheme envisions judicial review of these rates?
So let me answer that question and go back to Justice Pollack's second question, was who else could sue? Your Honor, there is no reason why San Diego has to assert third-party standing here. If there were a ratepayer to a retail district who thought they were burdened by the passing on to San Diego of certain costs and the retail agency passing on to those individuals, and those individuals had standing from an injury on their water bill and they wanted to sue, they could sue. There's no need for San Diego to stand in the shoes of ultimate water ratepayers. So there's not an absence of a class. This is not a tree that will fall in the forest with no one to hear.
An indirect purchaser claim.
Well, something like that, Your Honor. But to go back to Justice Sagan's point about 1668, this is not a 1668 case. The statutory language is clear that a right must be voided, or there must be an exemption. You must void liability or exempt from liability. And a contract clause that tries to say, if you want this benefit, please don't sue us in court, go to an alternative venue and work it out administratively, is a far cry from voiding liability or exempting from liability, Your Honor. It's a carrot, not a stick. We don't think any of the 1668 cases are remotely applicable because they're not cases in which there was simply a venue transfer, basically. This says, don't sue us in court, work it out administratively. That's not 1668. So even accepting your premise, Your Honor, I do accept your premise. 1811 in the Wheeling Statute creates a judicially reviewable right, and 1668 creates judicially reviewable right. That's not the question here. The question here is, has met through offering a contract term with a non-suit clause, burdened San Diego's right to petition. And Justice Pollack, there's no case from the founding that suggests that a municipal entity, as a creature of the state, has a right to petition against the state. The whole point of...
Against the state.
Against the state. But Your Honor, we live in a world in which every municipal entity, including both parties here, are creatures of the state. And the problem doesn't go away. The right to petition has to be the people against the state. It can't be a state entity against another part of the state. Otherwise, the right to petition would not be the ultimate safety valve it is against government. Right? All the very noble rhetoric you heard from my friend on the other side, the reason why we have a right to petition is so that the people who are separate from the government is our agent, can petition the government for redress of grievances. But two agents of the people can't have rights to petition against each other. It would be a most extraordinary and novel, and I think, frankly, unsustainable ruling for you as a matter of first impression to be the first court in the history of the Republic.
Your enabling statutes don't say they have the right to sue and be sued except for suing one another. I mean, they say,
well, that's true, Your
sue
Honor.
And be sued.
And here they would, they have, all that we're doing is withholding a benefit. And they have, by entering into the, we've heard a lot about how Met is imposing things on San Diego. That's like saying that the Padres are imposing a high cost for a seat behind home plate. They don't have to be a member of our collective, and they don't need to buy water or Wheeling or exchange purchases from us. This is a voluntary transaction between municipal agents. And the only way we're trying to induce them not to sue us in court, creating rate instability, creating all the uncertainty this litigation has caused, is by saying, if you sue us, we'll withhold certain benefits. We're not barring you from suing. We're just holding that you won't get a certain benefit as a result. So we haven't stopped them from suing, Your Honor. We've simply said, if you take the money, you can't sue. That's a voluntary waiver by a sophisticated party with a right to sue clause. They elected to forego the money. And so, Your Honor, with respect, we think the standing issue is sufficient to affirm. But if you have any doubt, we really have never had our day on court, in court on the Robbins factors. The Superior Court engaged in an extended soliloquy on the Robbins factors, but there's no evidence to support any of those findings, and we deserve a chance if you think that there's any standing here to have a remand for review of those factors on an evidentiary record. You've been very kind, Your Honor, with extra time. Can I indulge in 3 points of rebuttal, or is it time for lunch?
Nothing about lunch. We don't take lunch here.
I don't want to stand between you and lunch if that were so.
That's not an issue. But you're right. I have been very patient. That part was essentially correct. Mr. Kicker had issued some forbearance, if you will, which I appreciated relative to not seeking to repeat many of the matters that had been represented at some length in the briefing.
Correct, Your Honor.
And I'm going to ask you to demonstrate the same.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I will.
Forbearance. What are you going to propose?
I want to simply make 3 very quick points that hopefully don't repeat anything that you've already said. I want to say, first, there's an important...
Before you launch...
Give me a limit.
How much time were you thinking?
2 minutes.
That'll be excellent. 2 minutes it is.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. 3 quick points in rebuttal on Met's appeal. First, impose. You have an easy way to reverse the Prop 226 ruling by saying that we did not impose any tax on members of a voluntary collective. That's an exceedingly strange interpretation of Prop 26. It just doesn't apply at all. If it applies, then you should still reverse for the reasons we've discussed. Second, all one system. There was a colloquy between Justice Pollack and Mr. Kicker about those 2009 transactions where San Diego used non-project water and it wheeled it on the project, on the state water project. And he said, oh, well, that just cost a little trivial amount. Well, why did it cost a trivial amount? Because Met had already paid on behalf of its member agencies for the right to use the transportation facilities. It's all one system. That's why those incremental costs were low. So that exchange just proved our point. It's all one system. Transportation on the state water project is a right of our members because we have paid for that infrastructure and continue to pay for that infrastructure. And last, Your Honor, I just want to agree wholeheartedly with Justice Pollack that Mr. Kicker's argument all came down to title. It was, he kept saying, it's your conveyance system down there, but it's not your conveyance system up there. That's wrong. We know it's wrong from Goodman, because Goodman said the state is just a conduit. The people who paid for the state water project are the member agencies. And Met has paid for those the state water project just as much through its contract obligations, which are quite unique. It's not a widget contract. It's not going to the water store. It's we're paying for the infrastructure, the canals, the aqueducts, the pumps and pipes. We're paying for that operation. We have since 1960, and that's what enables member agencies to wheel on all one system that includes the state water project. So with respect, we hope and trust that you'll reverse the decision of the Superior Court. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both of you for your presence here this afternoon for the matter of arguing these cases and for the briefing that preceded those arguments. The matter now will stand submitted. Thank you.